Deacons Meeting. And for those of you who don't get to participate in those kind of things, it is hot in here. This is really, really encouraging. It's encouraging to be a part of leadership in a congregation that is as optimistic and excited about things that are going on and things that we want to do and plan to do. And it's just a neat thing to be a part of this family and to sit and listen to these guys that are deacons talk about what they want to accomplish and how they want to expand their ministry, and listen to Glenn talk about how much more money he wants and for our mission program. And it is fun, though, isn't it? It really is. And you wouldn't want him any other way. Well, maybe a little, but it's really, I want to just say how much I appreciate being a part of you. Janice and I have been here just over a year, and it's been a lot of fun, and it's been a good ride. And I guess it's about time for the honeymoon to be over, so we're talking about marriage and the home, and I'm glad you laughed about that. But we do want to address the things that are most needful in our lives. And we all need to be reminded. It's kind of interesting, too, to be in a congregation where you have a fair number of people that didn't grow up in the Church of Christ, that did not grow up in a religious background. That's a neat thing, because you talk about some things that some of us have heard all of our life, and you realize that not everybody had the advantage of growing up in a Christian home. And hearing things that you and I sometimes, who grew up in a Christian home, take for granted. And one of those things is about how to have a Christian home. There is no greater factory for building Christians than a Christian home. There's not even a good second. That's where God designed for Christians. That's the breeding ground for Christianity. That we have our sons and our daughters go out and they catch the zeal. They catch the love that we have for the Lord. And it's such a privilege to be a part of a congregation where you have men like Corey who work with the young people. And I'm old enough now. In fact, I don't know if I like that. I never had heard that verse to that new song about, I know when I grow old, my voice is going to grow weak or something. I don't know if I like that or not, because I'm struggling with my voice this whole weekend here. But it's a neat thing to be a part of your children and to have input into their lives, because I've lived long enough that I've seen some little guys this big and girls this big grow up to be really, really strong leaders in the church. And that's the payoff. That's a really neat thing. And so I'm excited about all the new families and new babies that come. And, you know, of all the pictures in the whole world, you know what the sweetest one is? It's Jeremy and Amanda holding Jake, smiling. That's as sweet as it gets. And then the grandparents behind poking you and making sure that you see that baby. Everything's right with the world. Or even though it's not, it's really not important. Because what's important is right there. And not too far behind that picture of being a sweet picture is a picture of Ken and Janice sitting in a backyard swing with six grandchildren laying all over them and hugging all over them. That's not too far behind. Because now our children are grown, and we have another layer coming on. And nothing in this whole world can bring you so much joy and happiness as a family happily serving God together. I'm very aware that not everyone has this in your life. And I want this for everybody. Some of you don't have it because you've not found the right person to marry. And some of you don't have it because you made some bad decisions in your life and you're having to deal with some harsh consequences. And others because somebody else made a bad decision or a series of bad decisions and you're having to live with the consequences of their bad decisions. And I'm very aware that not everyone has such a beautiful picture in our family. And I want to say again that it's not my desire to cause anybody any pain. But I know that whenever you teach about what the Bible, you teach what the Bible has to say about marriage in the home, it does cause some pain. And more people than ever before are in painful, stressful relationships, situations. And some are there because nobody told you any differently. Nobody told you how to stay out of that. Nobody told you about making good decisions. You just didn't know. And some of you didn't know because you weren't taught. And some of you didn't know because you weren't listening. And I don't mean that to be smart aleck. I just mean sometimes things don't really seem that important until it's too late. Until you're on the backside of something and the consequences are coming down around your ears and then you think back and wish that you had listened a lot better and wish that some things that weren't very important in your life had been more important in your life and that you had listened to what God said and been more serious about taking Him literally and what He said. And you know, I can't do too much about the listening business, but I can do a little bit about the teaching business, about the taught part. And you see, that's part of our job as a church family. And I've said this before, and you know, it's not an absolute, but I don't tie into this thing real big about it takes a village to raise a child. I think if you have a village to help you, that's great. But I think you can do it without a village. Noah did. Noah and his wife did. And it's really, really a great thing to have a village to help you raise a child. But don't depend on the village. That's your responsibility as a parent. And it's your responsibility as a husband and a wife to listen to what the Lord has to say. But it's a really nice thing and an incredible blessing to have a church family, to have that village who cares about your children and about your family. And that we teach one another what God says about how to be successful, and we share with each other the things that we've learned in life about how to apply those things. You know, the hard part's not teaching what the Bible says. The hard part's applying it. It's always that way, isn't it? We can sit in Bible class and we can agree about what the Bible says about almost anything. Now, there'll be some disagreements, but fundamentally we can come to an agreement about what the Bible says here. But it's that application part, isn't it? It's when my ox is being gored. It's whenever there's pain that's coming into my life that things really get difficult. And it's whenever it's in my child's life and I see pain coming into their life because of decisions that have yet to be made or maybe decisions that were made. We're talking about the God-assigned roles of submission in our home. And everybody does. Everybody submits. We're examining in today's lessons how and why a wife is to submit to her husband. And I feel a need to say something right here. While I can never fully appreciate the reality of what's required of a woman to submit to her husband, I do have some real sympathy for wives. Because, quite frankly, I've met some real jerks out there. And I can't imagine trying to submit to some of the guys that I've met. And what kind of task that would be and the strain that that would bring on your life. You know, once when Janice and I were dating back in the 1920s or whenever it was, I always was seeing this picture on the TV or wherever of these two people riding on a bicycle built for two. And they always looked like they were happy and their hair was blowing in the breeze and just everything looked wonderful. And so I thought I'd just be real romantic. And so I went out and rented a bicycle built for two, and we went to the park and we got on that thing, and it was great. But there's something I need to tell you about that picture. And that is, the guy that you see in there is smiling because he's in the front seat. It's not much fun on the back seat. I didn't know that. And if you've ever tried, how many of you ever ridden on a bicycle built for two? The person on the back has to let the person in the front have control. Because if you don't lean when they lean, you're going to have problems. And you better assume that they know where they're going and let them go where they want to go, because if you start trying to drive from the back seat, somebody's going to get hurt. And I can tell you from personal experience who it's going to be. And so for, I don't know, an hour or so, I was in the front and we were just having this great time and it was wonderful. And then, you know, Janice wanted to get up front and drive for a little while, so I got on the back. But I didn't like the way that she did it, and so we had lots of problems. And you know, I really do think that that's kind of a picture of what it means to submit. You got to lean at the right time. And it surely does help if you have a lot of respect and confidence in that person up front, that they're going where you want to go. And it wouldn't hurt to talk that over occasionally. It's hard to let someone else take the lead. And so, ladies, my hat is off to you. In our last lesson, we briefly noted some New Testament passage that I'd like to go back, and I don't even know that I would even call this exactly a sermon tonight. I just want to go back and revisit those passages that we talked about and pull out a few little gems, hopefully, that will help our understanding and fill in a few gaps from what we had in up to this point in our study. And so I'd like for you, you know that our first passage is taken from Ephesians chapter 5, but I'd like for you to go Colossians chapter 3, verse 18. Colossians chapter 3, verse 18. And that's a real short section there about this topic here in this. It just simply says, wives, hupotasso, line yourself up under, or arrange yourself under your own husband, as is fitting in the Lord. Now, by the way, it's kind of interesting. In the Bible, in the Greek language, there is no word for husband, by the way. And there is no word for wife. It is your man or your woman. Literally, the man of you and the woman of you. And so whenever the Greek wanted to say, refer to your husband, they would say your man. Now, have you ever heard a woman refer to her husband as my man? I have to tell you, I kind of like that. I mean, really. It really sounds pretty good. You know, whenever a woman is talking about my man does this, you know. And I remember, I only know of one lady that consistently refers to her husband that way. And it is a term of endearment, you know, and she means it as a compliment. It's a pretty neat thing. And I always like to be around her and hear her say that, you know, talk about her husband that way. But anyway, it says wives are to submit themselves to their man as is fitting in the Lord. And the word fitting literally means to arrive at something as a conclusion, as if it were a conclusion, to arrive at something. And so this is just what is proper and what's right and what's reasonable in the way that it really ought to be. And so you arrive at that. And so it says, wives, submit yourselves to your man as is the right thing, is the reasonable thing to do in the Lord. Now turn to 1 Peter chapter 3, verse 1 through 6. So far, this is kind of fun, isn't it? First Peter chapter 3, verse 1 through 6. Wives, in the same way, be submissive to your husbands. If you want to know what same way is, go back to chapter 2, verse 13 and verse 18. He's talking in the whole context about submitting. And said, so he says, wives, in the same way, be submissive to your husbands, so that if any of them do not believe the word, they may be won over without talk by the behavior of their wives when they see the purity and reverence of your lives. There are some ladies who are married to guys that are not Christians, and they don't really want you to talk to them about being a Christian. I know lots of ladies that way. And there reaches a point when you try to talk to your husband about that and he gets more resistant to that. You know, nobody likes somebody to push them into something. And men particularly don't like that. Or maybe I should say women don't particularly like that. I don't know which one, but nobody likes to be pushed into something. And if you feel like somebody's trying to force you into something, even though it may be something good, you are pretty resistant to that. And guys kind of have that built into us. And so he says, whenever you find yourself, ladies, wives, when you find yourself married to somebody like that, then he says what you need to do is you need to hush. And you need to live a kind of life that's going to get under his skin. And it happens. And when it happens, it is an incredible thing. There's no guarantee it's going to happen. But when it does happen, it is a beautiful thing. And I have been able, just can remember personally witnessing in my life, a lady who lived that way in front of her husband. And I don't know how many years they were married, but when he was 82 years old, he became a Christian. And he would never, ever, ever come to church with her. All during the years of three children growing up, never would. Didn't have time for it. Didn't want anything to do with it. 82 years old. He became a Christian. Now, you think that wasn't a sweet day? You think we didn't cry some tears over that deal? And it's because she kept living the kind of life that he said. And verse 3, he says, and this is the word beauty, your beauty should come from, is the word, the Greek word is cosmeo. You got any guesses what words we get from that, young ladies? Cosmetics. You want to know what God's cosmetics are, what you put on your eyes and your lips and, you know, how you get yourself prettied up? He says, your cosmeo should not come from outward adornment, such as braided hair, wearing of gold jewelry, fine clothes. Instead, it should be that of your inner self, the unfading beauty of a gentle and quiet spirit, which is of great worth in God's sight. Can you see that? Yeah, you can. You may not see it at first glance, like you do when you get your eyes painted up and your lips painted up and your mascara on. But you can see it, can't you? And it makes a greater impression for a lot longer. He says, which is of great worth in God's sight. For this is the way the holy women of the past who put their hope in God used to make themselves beautiful. They were submissive to their own husbands, like Sarah, who obeyed Abraham and called him her master. You are her daughters if you do what is right and do not give way to fear. And so in this context here, he's talking about an inward beauty and an outward beauty, ladies. And it has to do with the influence that you have on your husband and how you influence your husband. And it's not for the short run. It's going to take a long time. But hopefully you're going to be together a long time. And you're going to grow old together, and you might as well get to the end of that journey and have done everything that you can within your power, exactly like the Lord said, and trust that that's the very best thing to do in your life. It's not easy. In fact, I can't say that I know how hard it is, but it would be incredibly hard to be married to someone who really not only didn't have any interest in spiritual things, but sometimes went far beyond that. I'm familiar with a lady who became a Christian. Her husband told her if she ever went back to church, he would break both of her legs. And I'm familiar with another situation where the husband wouldn't give his wife didn't drive, and he wouldn't take her to church. And so a Christian man came by and picked her up, and he met him outside with a gun and said, if you come back to my house, pick my wife up again, I'll kill you. I wouldn't want to live with somebody like that. But the only hope that that person has of influencing that kind of guy is just exactly what he says right here. Will you give me a guarantee that it'll work? No. Neither does the Lord. But it's the only hope you've got. And it does soften hearts over a long period of time. 1 Corinthians chapter 11, verse 1, if you turn there. 1 Corinthians chapter 11, verse 1. And you know that Paul in Corinth is dealing with problems. There's just a whole series of problems in 1 Corinthians that he's dealing with. And the problem that he's dealing with here is there's a women's liberation movement going on in Corinth, and the church has is influenced by it, just like we always are. It takes a little while, but we're always influenced by the things that are happening in our society, and we have to deal with them. And so in 1 Corinthians chapter 11, verse 1, he says, am I in the right place here? Yes. Follow my example as I follow the example of Christ. I praise you for remembering me and everything and for holding to the teachings just as I pass them on to you. Now I want you to realize that the head of every man is Christ, the head of every woman is man, the head of Christ is God, and then he goes on and he addresses a problem with the head covering there. Now, whether that head covering, and I don't really fit in with most folks in the church, I guess, that I've heard, or most commentaries that I've read about this, I think he's talking about hair. Okay, I mean, I know he's talking about hair, but I think the covering that he's talking about. And I'm not sure that he's talking about a veil, even though I know a veil was prominent in that society. But whether he's talking about cropped hair or whether he's talking about a veil, in this context, he will tell the women not to participate in what's going on in society, but to maintain this covering on their head as a sign of authority. And specifically, that they are under the authority of their husbands, and that they are submitting, and it was a sign of submission. This head covering, whether it was veiled, whether it was a veil or cropped hair, was being removed by two groups, prostitutes and protesters. And in the 60s, we went through a series of women protesting, and it was in the headlines all the time. And he said, you leave your sign of authority on your head because a virtuous woman will call attention to her husband rather than herself. You got it? A virtuous woman will call attention to her husband, her head, and not herself. Now I want you to turn to Titus chapter 2. In the next couple of passages that we're going to look at, and this is going to cease to be as much fun for some probably, but I want us to address the idea of what is a woman's primary God-given role. What is a woman to be about in her life? In Titus chapter 2, verse 3 is the first place I want you to go. Titus 2, 3. Likewise, teach the older women to be reverent in the way they live, not slanderers or addicted to much wine, but teach what is good. They can train the younger women to, and look at this list, love their husbands, or love their own man, and their children, love their children, to be self-controlled, pure, busy at home, to be kind, to be subject to their husbands, so that no one will malign the word of God. Now, we read this morning, but I want to pull out a couple of words for you there. The first one is, when he says love their husbands, and this one's pretty easy, it's phileo, which is a brother love. And by the way, I find it really interesting. I don't know if I've got my hand completely or my mind completely around this thing. Whenever it tells wives to love their husbands, it doesn't all the time use the word agape, which is that selfless love. When it tells husbands to love their wives, it uses that all the time. But when it tells wives to love their husbands, use phileo, to have a kindly affection toward him. Now, I'm not quite sure that I know what to do with that. Maybe some of you can help me and you can do some thinking about that and think why he would use those two different terms there. But the word for man is andros, and phileo is love, and so to be their man lover, to be their husband lover. It said older women ought to teach the younger women to love their husbands. And it's not erotic, it's not eros, it's not talking about sexual love. And interestingly, it's not agape, it's phileo love. To have this tender, brotherly, kind, family affection toward their husbands. And also to be, and the word for child is technos, to phileo technos, to love their children, to have that kind of motherly feeling, family feeling for their children, and to be able to display that properly. And then he says, and teach them to be, and the NIV says, busy at home. And the word there is the keeper of the home. It is oikos. It literally is a house worker. Ergon, we get ergonomics from it. Ergon is to work, motion, to work. And the woman, the older women are to teach the younger women to be house workers or home workers. That is a primary responsibility. And then turn to 1 Timothy chapter 5, verse 14. 1 Timothy 5, 14. And in this context, he's talking about widows, and the church evidently at that time, in the early beginnings of the church. In some ways, as it is in some churches today, they had widows that were unable to take care of themselves and didn't have family that was willing or able to take care of them. So they would put them on a roll and they would give them food and they would take care of their needs and provide for them and so forth. And then he's given instructions about widows and which widows are to be served by the church and so forth. But then he gets down to the younger widows in verse 11. As for younger widows, I'm in 1 Timothy 5. Do not put them on such a list. For when their sensual desires overcome their dedication to Christ, they want to marry. Thus, they bring judgment on themselves because they have broken their first pledge. Evidently, they had to make a commitment that they were going to remain this way in order to be put on the roll that the church had. He says, beside, they learn by use and practice, they get into the habit of being idle and going about from house to house. And not only do they become idlers, but also gossips and busybodies, saying many things they ought not to. So I counsel younger widows to marry, to have children, and to manage their homes, and give the enemy no opportunity for slander, as some, in fact, have already turned away to follow Satan. And this is a similar word to the house worker, except the word that's attached to oikos, which is house, is despotes. And we get the word despot from it. And that's taken on a bad connotation in our English language. A despot is a ruler that tends to be really heavy-handed, right? And when somebody talks about a despot, it's somebody that's really a mean, cruel tyrant. But the word didn't originally mean that. It just simply meant a ruler. And so he says that these younger widows are to learn to be oikos despotes, rulers of their home. And I would put those two passages together for you, Titus 2, 3 and 1 Timothy chapter 5, verse 14, and suggest to you that God intends for the woman's primary focus in her life to be her home. Now, I don't have anything against a woman. It doesn't matter whether I do or not, but I don't have anything against a woman working outside the home if that's not her primary focus of her life. And let me hasten to say just behind that, I don't have anything wrong with a man working outside the home if that's not the focus of his life. Too many of us have let something outside our home become our real focus in our life. Maybe our work, maybe our jobs, and our families are paying for it. And when both mom and dad, husband and wife, when their focus, their primary focus, is on that Christian home, boy, it's a sweet thing. And it's the way God intended for it to be. And when we get some of these principles into us and we begin to try to apply some of these principles and we sit down and talk about the fact that all of us submit to one another, and I didn't design it this way. I'm not the head of my house because I said, hey, I'm going to be the head. I'm the head of my house because God said that's the way I want it to be. My wife submits to me, not because that's necessarily what she wants to do in her life. You'll have to talk to her about that. But it's because that's what God told her to do. And whenever we practice this in our homes and our lives turn around. And so many of us have got this war going on, and it's going on everywhere. And things are not right at the job because things are not right at home. And things are not right at home because things are not right wherever it is that we're putting a primary focus in our lives. And we have all these struggles. And we look back and we think, how did I ever get into all this? How did this thing get so complex and so much pain involved and so much struggle and so much war going on in homes? It's because when we had the opportunity, when we were making decisions that were going to affect where we were going in our life, we either didn't know or we wouldn't listen. And as I said, I can't do too much about the listening part, but we can do something about the knowing part. And maybe you find yourself in a real difficulty in your life, and when we study this, maybe it brings some pain into your life. And I'm really, really sorry about that. But I know that you want your children, at least this much, you want your children to know what God said so that they won't make those same mistakes. And you want them to have a happy home. And the only way that that can happen, I mean, they're going to follow the same path that mom and dad did unless something happens to intervene. And that's something that has to happen is we sit down and we talk to our children about this and we make sure that they understand what the Bible has to say about how to pick out a spouse and what kind of person do they need to marry. Marriage and home are designed by God to fulfill a wide variety of needs. And it does. It's an incredible thing. And when you choose to follow God's design plan, you lay a foundation for peace and happiness and fulfillment in your life that you can't find anywhere else except in a Christian home. And when you decide to make your own plan and to set aside what God says because you think you know better, and because this situation, you just are so in love with somebody or your emotions are so stirred up that you just can't help yourself. And so you go ahead and make that decision. And it turns out to be a poor decision that someday you regret. When that time comes that you decide to lay God's plan aside and make your own plan, then you're opening the door into your life for lots of pain and lots of heartache. But a Christian marriage, that's what we want to encourage here. And the only way that we can do that is to learn what God says about it. And so I'm going to end this lesson by saying to you that if there's a struggle in your life, God has provided a family for you to pray together with. And you know, it's going to really be a neat thing when I don't know what it takes to break the ice, but whenever we do sit down and hold one another's hand and do some praying together and talk to God about one another's problems. Or maybe you just can't bring yourself to do that. Well, bring yourself to find a Christian friend. And if you need to confess sins, then confess your sins one to another. And pray for one another because it brings healing in our life. And we invite God in and we open our heart up and the doors of our life. But as long as we just keep ourselves sealed off, maybe for protection or to save our pride or whatever it is, then we're probably blocking God out too. And if in some of this it brings some pain into our hearts, then probably God's trying to talk to you. And you ought to listen while we stand and sing.